Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
New York State saw a record-breaking number of flu cases for the week of December 20th, recording more than 70,000 cases statewide. Meanwhile, hospitalizations across the state because of the flu were up 63% over the last two reporting weeks. Combine this with other illnesses like RSV and COVID-19, and it's been a tough start to the cold and flu season. Legislative Gazette's Agena Shrestha spoke with the New York State Department of Health Commissioner James McDonald about this and more.
What do you think has led to this record-breaking number recently, and what could that mean for the upcoming peak of the flu season?
Yeah, you know, what you see this year is the flu strain, it's more severe. And we've been talking about this for the last several weeks, that when you see the flu strain, an influenza A virus, that the strain is H3N2, these tend to give you more severe flu seasons. And so I can't say this has come as a surprise to us. And what we're seeing right now is we are seeing a lot more cases. And just to put that context around this, you know, we reported 71,000 cases, you know, the week ending December 20th. But last year when we peaked, we only had 50,000 cases. You know, so we're already seeing more cases than the peak of last year. And the same is true for hospitalizations. Like the week ending December 20th, we had 3,600 hospitalizations. That's a lot. You know, I mean, last year at the peak, it was 3,500. So this is going to be a more severe flu season.
And what about this strain is making it so dangerous almost?
Yeah, the flu virus changes every year. So we expect it's going to change. Now, there is this strain in the vaccine. So, you know, early data we've seen from the United Kingdom helps us think that, you know, the flu vaccine is going to offer at least moderate protection. You know, one of the things I see, though, and it concerns me as state health commissioner, is the number of people who are getting flu vaccine in New York, it's only about the same as last year. And why that concerns me is we didn't get great uptake last year. And really, this just underscores to me, like, it's really important to make sure people are up to date with their flu vaccine. I think people need to remember is you can treat the flu. In other words, there's antiviral medications. Tamiflu is one that generally works quite well and really helps people. But I think these are kind of the key things is flu, we do have a vaccine for it and there is a treatment for it.
I see. And did anything with the new CDC guidelines regarding vaccines have an impact on how New Yorkers have been choosing to get vaccinated? Because like you said, it's the same as last year, but yet the strain is a little bit more stronger this year.
You know, what's been missing this year from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is just a message at all about the flu. They really haven't been saying much of anything about the flu. And I think that's one of the things that's been very different this year. I think one of the things you're also seeing is, you know, when you look at the federal health policy, it's a bit confusing, a bit chaotic. And I think this is really one of the things that just reminds me people should be relying on their state health department at this time, because we're not confused and we're not chaotic. You know, we are experts and we know what we're talking about. And that's part of why I'm just reminding people, if you haven't had the flu vaccine yet, now is as good a time as any.
And regarding this flu, how is this impacting bed capacities in hospitals throughout the state?
Yeah, we monitor that, as you might imagine, every single day. Right now, bed capacity in New York is okay. The vacancy rate, it's about the same as it was last year. So right now, we're okay in New York State, but it's something my team and I look at very closely to make sure. Now, that doesn't mean emergency departments are doing okay, because typically this time of the year, emergency departments and urgent cares and doctor's offices, they notice people are getting sick because you see an increased volume. So this is part of why it's important to remember, like, you know, if you can get that flu vaccine, that's good. And keep in mind, the flu vaccine is good at preventing you from ending up in the hospital and good at preventing you from passing away. That's the promise of the flu vaccine. It's really effective in that regard. Doesn't help everybody, but it's a lot better than nothing.
And speaking of that promise to everybody, who's getting sick the most and what are you seeing about that demographic and why?
Yeah, what we see right now is, quite frankly, all age groups are getting ill. But the demographics that are ending up in the hospital are the 65 and older group, but also our little ones. In other words, when you think about little ones under the age of four, they have a hard time with influenza as well. And I think this is one of the things is, like, you know, people tend to think of the flu as a common disease. And although it may be common, when you actually get influenza, the real honest to goodness flu, you're sick with that. You know, and it's noticeable. And the vulnerable, 65 and older, little ones, and anyone with a chronic disease, they're a much higher risk of ending up in a hospital.
And touching on that risk, we also have RSV in the air, as they would say. And how do you think that RSV is also factoring into all of this in the state of New York? What's the general status update on that?
Yeah, we have seen a little increase in RSV compared to the week before, a 25% increase. It's all over the state, but it's interesting. We're not seeing as much RSV as we did last year or the year before, which I'm optimistic about. I think part of that might be there's now a vaccine for RSV. It's been out several years now. That vaccine's targeted for the older crowd, but also our babies and people who are going to give birth. And I think this underscores just it's been great for me to see that new tool, the RSV vaccine. You know, we're noticing it. But I only had a 4% increase when it came to hospitalizations from RSV, had a 25% increase in cases. But if you just put context around this, we had 4,900 RSV cases. I had 71,000 flu cases. So, you know, that's a big difference.
And regarding just the cases and the vaccines, obviously, there's a lot in the air with people, you know, not knowing, do we go to the CDC for guidelines or do we rely on our DOH, the statewide? And just regarding all that, how would you say DOH is anticipating just hurdles in the upcoming year with just the back and forth that's happening with the CDC, the HHS, and the state?
Yeah, the New York State Department of Health is huge. And we have national experts who work here. You know, so we don't really rely on the CDC as much as smaller health departments do. You know, sometimes the CDC actually comes to us for things. And I think it's really important for people to know that is like the New York State Department of Health has been around since 1901. We've seen a lot. And, you know, quite frankly, I have national experts who work for us here, you know, and this is part of what I think the message to New Yorkers is you should be looking to your New York State Department of Health for guidance. And because we know what's going on here and there's no one here who's got any other agenda other than keeping you healthy. That's all we're interested in doing is keeping you healthy.
Would you say the CDC and other federal agencies' actions have not necessarily impacted the state health operation then?
I think what I'm just seeing from the federal government right now is their federal policy is really confusing and they're not talking about things they used to talk about. Like normally what we would hear for the last several months is you would have seen the CDC director talking about the importance of flu season and flu vaccine. We don't even have a CDC director right now. And this, to me, just underscores where the federal government is they just haven't really been able to really embrace public health. And, you know, coming out of a pandemic, our country needed to embrace public health, but we haven't. And this is why I really feel like it's just important to rely on your state health department, because we are embracing public health. We live and breathe this every day. You know, I go to bed worrying about 20 million New Yorkers, and I wake up trying to figure out what I can do to help people stay healthy. I have a whole bunch of people out here do the same thing.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner.
My pleasure. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
That was the Legislative Gazette's Sagina Shrestha speaking with New York State Department of Health Commissioner James McDonald. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter for WNYC, The Gothamists, and the New York Public News Network, to talk about some of the top political stories of the year.
probably the biggest came at the very end, was Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman from New York, who was going to be ambassador, then not ambassador, who was going to run for governor of New York, then was going to face a challenge, and then didn't really get an endorsement from the president, and sort of lukewarm. And now she says, not only am I out of the governor's race, but I'm going to end my term and be out of politics. That's a pretty big shocker.
Yeah, this is something that, you're right, had been slow boiling for quite some time. And, you know, I think as you just laid out, there are lots of reasons for any person who has gone through the path and the 2025 that Elise Stefanik has to be very frustrated. So it's clear that she was frustrated when her nomination to the United Nations was scuttled, because essentially Republicans in the House of Representatives have such a thin margin that either the concern that the GOP would lose her North Country congressional seat, that's the 21st district, it would be my guess that the Republicans would have still held on to it, but just the fact that it would have been vacant for some period of time between her resignation from Congress and when an election can be held and a new person can be seated, that was a problem for Republican leaders who are really operating on a razor's edge in the House of Representatives. So she was back in Congress and, you know, frustrated in that regard. Frustrated at House leadership. She's made very clear her frustration at House Speaker Mike Johnson, the Republican from Louisiana, and, you know, started talking and thinking more seriously about running for governor over the summer. Now, she cleared what seemed to have been a major hurdle with that over the summer when Representative Mike Lawler of the Lower Hudson Valley announced that he would not run a campaign for governor. So essentially avoiding what would have been a very contentious and messy primary between two Republicans in the state who have very, very high profiles. So it looked like things were smooth sailing for Stefanik. And sure enough, right after the polls closed on Election Day this year, she announced a campaign with a tour de force of supporters. Even Lawler, her one-time rival, endorsed her in an event. You saw Republican Party officials from Buffalo to Brooklyn line up behind her bid. Donor support poured in. But as you said, David, there was one person who didn't quite get on board, and that was President Trump. That's surprising because Stefanik, while she was first elected as a more moderate Republican in 2014, has really become one of President Trump's staunchest defenders in Congress. She was on his defense team during his impeachment. And to not get his explicit blessing, I think, must have landed as a blow. And when that happened, it gave an opening for Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, who won a resounding re-election in November of this year, a rare red spot in what was otherwise a pretty good night for Democrats across the country. So Blakeman, with a very powerful base in Nassau County, one of the state's most populous counties, said that he would explore a bid for governor. And then he announced his candidacy for governor. And it was against that backdrop, against all these frustrations, that Stefanik said, you know what, I would have won this primary, but doing so is going to cost resources. It was always going to be an uphill task for a Republican to defeat Kathy Hochul in a state where there are twice as many enrolled Democrats as there are Republicans.
And don't forget that the president of the United States has a past with Bruce Blakeman. They're former businessmen. They've known each other for a long time. And when he announced he was going to get in, he said, well, quote, I like both of them.
That's right. And so Stefanik, facing this possibility of having to deal with this primary that she wasn't expecting to, said she was done. She stated that the primary was a consideration, but also that she wanted to spend more time with her young son, who turned 4 in August. So I don't think this is the last we've heard of Elise Stefanik. She's a relatively young person, 41 years old, and she clearly has exhibited an interest in the public conversation and an ambition to insert herself and to be part of it. So I don't think this is the last we'll hear from her, and we will see what the next chapter for her holds.
One thing we haven't mentioned here is Zohran Mamdani, who won the mayor's race in New York City, a Democratic socialist who, now let's stick with Stefanik for a second. Stefanik was hammering and calling a jihadist and is hitting him as hard as she could. And then Mamdani wins, goes to the White House, and is greeted very nicely by the president of the United States, asked about whether he considers him a jihadist. No. And, you know, he's a smart man, basically. They agreed with each other that they could work together. So that was another slight there. But now you have the prospect of Mamdani, a democratic socialist, now has to govern in New York City and at some point come hat in hand to Albany for the money.
That's right. And I think one of the major themes of 2026 will be watching how Zoran Mamdani, an ascendant figure in the left flank of the Democratic Party, deals with the moderates who control the state legislature, particularly Kathy Hochul. Now, Kathy Hochul endorsed Mamdani. She is facing a Democratic primary challenge for her own reelection effort in 2026. And so the question is, how much of Mamdani's agenda will Hochul acquiesce to? One of the big questions that I'll be watching very closely is raising taxes in the state. So Mamdani has proposed multiple efforts that will cost lots of money, including a massive expansion of child care subsidies and a push to make buses fare free in New York City. He wants to fund them by taxing the rich, by taxing millionaires. So Hochul has said she does not want to raise income taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers. Will they find another way to circle that square? I think it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be something we'll be talking about in the coming months.
That's Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter for WNYC, The Gothamist, and the New York Public News Network. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York Farm Bureau says there should be no more biosolids used as fertilizer unless they are clear of PFAS forever chemicals. The New York Public News Network's Natalie Abruzzo has more.
The New York Farm Bureau says it's, quote, opposed to the land application of biosolids, which have detectable amounts of PFAS. PFAS are man-made chemicals that do not break down in the environment. They're connected to reproductive issues, developmental delays in children, and some cancers. This is a departure from the State Farm Bureau's 2019 policy to support education about the benefits and concerns using biosolids as fertilizer. Organizational leadership said at the time, municipal prohibitions restricting the use of biosolids should not be allowed. However, three towns have banned the use of biosolids, also called sewage sludge, in land application. They are Thurston, Cameron, and Goshen. Sewage sludge is a combination of human and manufacturing waste and can contain PFAS forever chemicals. The organization announced this new position as part of its 2026 policy agenda at its annual convention earlier this month. They support testing for PFAS in all sewage sludge and its products before land application. The Bureau also backs the creation of a task force to respond to PFAS contamination and federal or state funding for PFAS cleanup efforts. They say biosolid suppliers must be required to pay for testing of the forever chemicals and provide the report findings for free to potential customers. The New York Farm Bureau says it wants farm owners, farmland, and food production protected from any potential loss or damage due to PFAS contamination. The organization supports the prohibition of biosolids from out of state being used in New York. There's currently a bill calling for a 5-year moratorium on land spreading of biosolids. It passed the state Senate last legislative session. It is awaiting a vote in the Assembly. In Corning, Natalie Abruzzo for the New York Public News Network.
New York State is launching a pilot program to find ways to keep vaping products out of the waste stream. As Ellen Abbott with the New York Public News Network reports, it will attack one of the fastest growing and most complex waste issues facing the state today.
Thousands of single-use vape devices are tossed in the trash or recycle bins every day in New York State, and Catherine Walker, executive director for the state's Center for Sustainable Materials Management, says they shouldn't be.
They contain batteries, plastics, and either nicotine or cannabis residues that require careful handling and disposal.
In an ideal world, they'd be disposed of as part of a county's household hazardous waste program. But many people are unaware of the rules of their county, and they differ throughout the state. That's why Walker, along with the Product Stewardship Institute in New York State, are partnering to launch an e-cigarette and vaping device collection program pilot.
In this pilot, and one of the things that we need to do is make sure that collection is easy for folks that are using vapes. Again, it's easy to throw something in your recycling, throw something in your trash at home. That's not where these products belong. So first of all, we have to let people know through outreach and education that this is the case.
There are some complications. For example, Walker says there's a problem in schools. Kids throw the items in the trash or in the toilet, so there would need to be targeted awareness there. Also, the program is trying to work with the state's Office of Cannabis Management to get disposal bins in shops that sell the items, so individuals buying a new vaping device could drop it off at the same time. To figure out the best way to do things, the pilot will select 5 communities in New York State and test potential strategies.
Increase in those communities, not only the outreach and education piece, like I said, but actually create more opportunities at both hazardous waste facilities and those retailers for collection, so that we can increase the safe collection of these materials and manage the waste in a safe way.
The vaping disposal program is in line with the Department of Conservation's goals to recycle 85% of the waste stream in New York State by 2050. In Syracuse, I'm Ellen Abbott for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Ski and Snowboard has announced that the Aerials and Moguls World Cup competition in January, originally scheduled for Deer Valley in Utah, have been moved to 2 sites in the Northeast. Ski officials in the region say the change could be a boon to resorts in New York, New Hampshire, and Vermont, which, as the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports, are off to a strong start to the season.
World Cup competitions determine the eligibility of athletes to compete in the Olympics. So ahead of the 2026 Winter Games, U.S. Ski and Snowboard said it didn't want to take any chances. In moving the World Cup aerials competition to Lake Placid and the Moguls to New Hampshire, the Ski and Snowboard organization said the switch is, quote, due to unseasonably warm weather, unquote, at the Utah resort, and is, quote, designed to ensure critical qualification opportunities in an Olympic year, unquote. The relocations are part of an inversion of sorts that's taking place so far this season, where Northeast resorts are benefiting from early snowfall and cold temperatures that have allowed for snowmaking, while interior West resorts are coping with less than ideal conditions. Ski New York president Scott Brandy says the switch from a West Coast to East Coast venue for World Cup competition is unusual but not unprecedented, adding East Coast resorts have an advantage this year.
It's happened before. You know, we make our snow and they depend on natural snow. They need natural snow. We need cold weather. Because of our snowmaking, you know, we can pretty much get open and have consistency as opposed to the West.
The aerials will be at the jumping complex in Lake Placid. Olympic Regional Development Authority spokesperson Darcy Rowe Norfolk says the village will be hosting 2 World Cup finals that will qualify athletes for the Olympics.
We were already hosting a World Cup aerials competition at the Aerials Hill at the Lake Placid jumping complex. And now we've stepped up to host a second World Cup during that same time period. And so we're now just taking on the next weekend's event that was supposed to be happening in Deer Valley to do a double World Cup in Lake Placid. So now not only are we 2 World Cups and 2 qualification periods, but we're also the finals. These athletes are looking to qualify, and World Cup points is what they're after right now to be able to make it to that next level and represent their home country at the Olympics.
Ski Vermont spokesman Brian Rivard says ski resorts in the Northeast have had a strong early season, and many opened a week earlier than planned.
We do have some of the most powerful snowmaking systems in the world. We've been snowmaking for multiple decades now, and the reason it did come online in New England is the weather is a little fickle at times. So it was really a means of hedging the bets and making sure that there was always a consistent amount of snow on the hills. I think that is definitely an advantage that we do have over the West. We certainly still rely on natural snow. We love it when we get it.
Brandy says snow conditions have been fantastic and expects that the World Cup competition in Lake Placid will benefit all of New York's ski resorts.
Whenever there's a televised event and there's press on a snow sports event, be it freestyle, ski jumping, even luge, bobsled, much less specific skiing events, it always piques people's interest. And the more skiing and snow in the mountains is in the news, the better for all of us in the skiing universe. This being an Olympic year, we'll definitely see a pop from the Winter Olympics. And it's great for Lake Placid. It's a great thing for all of us.
While Vermont will not host any World Cup competition, Ski Vermont's Rivard says being the crossover state between the two Olympic qualifying events could benefit Green Mountain Resorts.
I'm trying not to take it too personally, the fact that they're just skipping right over us between New York and New Hampshire. But, I mean, if you definitely have that traffic right across us, and I would think that you're passing through anyway, I certainly would stop at a mountain and take a couple turns. So I can definitely see that helping out Vermont ski areas. And this is a great opportunity for all of New England to really showcase what they have and the conditions we're able to provide.
The FIS World Cup Aerials will be held in Lake Placid January 11th and 12th. The Mogul competition will take place at the Waterville Valley Resort in New Hampshire January 15th and 16th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2601. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Happy New Year.
Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.